Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org.
Jennifer Tober, Executive Artistic Director and Founder of Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the Parks. Shall I compare thee to a summer's theatrical outdoor production of Shakespeare?
Yes, thou shalt, I think.
We will. So you really are an actress.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that kind of what got you into this this production?
Yes, the company or the production? Well, this year is our 10th anniversary. We are doing As You Like It, which we did 10 years ago in 2005 in Frick Park in November. And I directed that show, and this year I am acting in it. I'm playing Rosalind, and the director is Lisa Ann Goldsmith, who I've worked with before.
Oh, yes.
And she's wonderful. Yeah, you probably know Lisa Ann.
Now, I have to guess, though, that you have a very long relationship with William Shakespeare.
I do.
Where did this affair begin?
This affair, I think, probably began at Temple University when we were just studying Shakespeare, and I remember we were reading something boring, and I forget, I shouldn't say that, it was one of the, maybe it was Troilus and Cressida or something, and all of a sudden I remember I was struggling through reading it, struggling with the language, looking in the lexicon, you know, looking up every word, every other word it seemed, and I remember I was in my apartment in Philly, and it kind of clicked, and suddenly I felt like I didn't need to look up every other word, I could read it fluidly, and I started to understand it. And then when I was an undergraduate at Temple, I spent a semester in London, and I was lucky enough to have a little monologue coaching session with Roger Allam, who was one of the actors at the Royal Shakespeare Company. One of my teachers kind of set that up, and I remember it being like, oh my, because it was kind of my dream to be in the Royal Shakespeare Company. And I remember in college, I would go to the library and get these videotapes out of, you know, these old productions of BBC, Royal Shakespeare Company, you know, Helen Mirren playing Juliet or Miranda or something. And I just loved it. And I always just have loved Shakespeare. And then when I moved to New York, I was lucky enough to be an intern for a bunch of years with Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival. And I eventually got my equity card there, and then I worked. I have done outdoor summer Shakespeare almost every year for my entire adult life. So, yes, it's been a long, long affair with William.
Now, it seems like there are a lot of cities in the United States that do outdoor Shakespeare. What is it about Shakespeare? I mean, I know that New York City is very famous for their productions in Central Park. So what is it about Shakespeare, do you feel, that really lends itself to an open park environment like that?
It's really interesting. I mean, I think, well, Shakespeare wrote his plays, remember, 450-ish years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so people, you know, there was no internet, obviously. There were not many people could even read, or if they had books were somewhat rare.
Yeah.
And so people told stories, and they went to see theater. And so it was very much, it was every man and every woman's type of entertainment, and people were very active. And so I think, you know, sometimes the plays were inside, but candles were expensive. They were dangerous. You know, there was no electricity. Things could burn down very quickly, those wooden theaters. And so they had theater outside largely during the day. And everybody came to it. And, you know, it wasn't the, we think of Shakespeare today as being formal and very kind of stodgy in some ways, right? I mean, we have people come up to us after a performance of Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the Parks and say, I understood every word. Did you change the language? How did you, you know, but we, when it was written, it was accessible to people. They understood every word. And if they didn't, they would throw things at their performers or they would yell. Or so the performers really had to be on their toes. And I don't think it was a very subtle thing. You know, it was all male players. And if a male was playing a female, which they did, I don't think that it was kind of the representational, realistic way that we would approach it. Mm. If I have to play a man, which I do in the show, you know, I want to make it seem somewhat truthful. They, you know, the men put on wigs and, you know, dresses and spoke in high voices and didn't, you know, it wasn't, it was to reach people. It was to entertain people. So it wasn't this kind of removed doublet and hose stodgy type thing most of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it was Shakespeare for everybody, for the groundlings, you know, for the king and queen. And so I think that's why it lends itself so well to the outside. You know, Shakespeare's not that subtle.
Right.
And when you're learning Shakespeare, when you're coming up, your teachers often tell you there's no subtext. What is said is what is happening, you know. And that's also true that there aren't that many stage directions because the actions are in the words. They're in the text. But we find it works very well outside. The language is very powerful, and we really work on having an immediate type of connection between the performers, the text, and the audience, so that it's all told in a very physical way, often involving the audience. Mm. And we like to use the grass, the playground, the woods, the trees, the parking lots, you know, the paths.
Really? So what is there then? It's sort of like pop-up theater,
yeah,
or very organic, I guess I should say.
It's very organic, and we do not build sets. We sometimes have set pieces. We have, in this production of As You Like It, for example, we have some stumps that are tree stumps that are actually made from a type of paper mache-esque material or some kind of light wood. And then we have a couple of, I guess they're called hassocks or little cubes that can be a bench at the court or can be a stump outside or can be something to climb on. But we tend to really just use the environs that we have and the audience also. Mm-hmm. So audience should be prepared to be involved or at least be addressed.
Back to my point.
Hopefully it's clean.
As founder of this company here in Pittsburgh, again celebrating 10 years this year, congratulations.
Thank you.
I mean, clearly there must have been a need for this 10 years ago. I mean, was there anything like it at the time?
Well, there had been Three Rivers Shakespeare that was tied into University of Pittsburgh. Hmm. And I remember when I was in graduate school at WVU coming up and auditioning. And I know that was started by Buck Favorini and Laura Folger, who I believe was a professor at Pitt also, was perhaps the artistic director, I think. But that had been gone for a number of years when I moved here in 2005. So I feel that there was a need. And it's just great to be able to bring the whole family or, you know, have a date and go to outdoor Shakespeare in the Parks. I mean, it's so accessible. But I think for me, there was a personal need for me because I had done outdoor Shakespeare in beautiful, you know, kind of lush settings up in the Hudson Valley or a Shakespeare play, you know, in Upper Manhattan in a park for three people or deep in Brooklyn, you know, with many different companies in New York. And so when I first moved here, I spent a lot of time in Frick Park drinking bubble tea from the Taiwanese place in Squirrel Hill that I love.
Do they still make that stuff?
They do. Oh, yeah. It's like a little tapioca and milk tea. You have to say milk tea black, half bubbles.
Oh, because they don't call it bubble tea anymore?
Well, depending on who you...
Okay.
Yeah. But so I spent a lot of time kind of reading The New Yorker, hanging out in Frick Park, and before I really started working... when I moved here in the fall of 2005, and a friend of mine, Linda Miyachi, does yoga in Frick Park, and she does it at the bottom at Blue Slide Playground in Squirrel Hill at the bottom of the sledding hill. And it's just, there's a sloping, a gently sloping hill, and then there's a kind of a, an amphitheater there. Kind of a natural setting for a play. And I just thought, this is perfect. This is beautiful. Let's do a play. And so I guess I kind of felt a personal lacking that I needed to do outdoor Shakespeare. And so we did a nice production of As You Like It that I directed, and it was really lovely. We did that in November. And there's also Poor York's Theater, which is in Monroeville. And Quantum Theater, of course, does outdoor Shakespearean productions sometimes. They tend to build sets where they go, whereas we use the ground. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's lovely to have, I think it should be mandatory in every city to have outdoor Shakespeare. And it is true that in larger cities, it's kind of an expected part of the cultural landscape. You know, New York City, for example, which is where I came before here, which is where I lived for a long time before I moved to Pittsburgh. There's Shakespeare in the parking lot down in the Lower East Side. There's the Public Theater at the Delacorte. There are, I mean, there's 20 Shakespeare companies doing stuff all over the city. And I think that's kind of that's an expected part, I think, of the cultural landscape. Whereas here, I think people are still, you know, they're still exploring it, but people always come up to us after.
They've only had about 500 years to come up, get with the program.
Yeah. And people will also come up and say, oh, you know, you guys do it in such a contemporary way. I understood everything. The kids understand everything. You know,
that's
we have
great.
3-year-olds who hang out at the, you know, right next to the actors, and, you know, we'll talk to them and say, like, no, he's really a man, or he's climbing over there, or no, you're supposed to pick up the letter, Romeo, or, you know, they get, these little kids get every word. And I, you know, people will often come up and say, oh, when I read it in English class, it was so boring, but you're Romeo and Juliet. People would say, we did Romeo and Juliet last year, directed by Helen Mead, and Romeo's story and Juliet's story ran simultaneously. So people had to choose the Capulet side or the Montague side, and then maybe had to come back a different day and see how it turned out. And we had people come up and say, I know how the story ends, and I still found myself crying, bawling at the end because it just seemed like it was so unexpected. And I think, you know, that's a testament to Helen Mead, who was a great director,
sure.
The actors that we get who just throw themselves into it. You know, I mean, acting Shakespeare is like, there's nothing. I remember I had a teacher who said, doing Shakespeare is like running a race, and doing outdoor Shakespeare is like doing a marathon or a triathlon, because you have to really be in good shape. I better stop drinking this martini. And you have to be physically in good shape, and you have to be able to project without hurting your voice.
Sure,
and you have to be able to take all of these different elements into consideration. You know, the wind, airplanes, people riding their bikes through the action, dogs, you know, being stung by bees, all these things.
Do you have somebody in your mind that you go to as having been a true master of acting Shakespeare or speaking Shakespeare? In short, who's your fave?
Well, I mean, I love Helen Mirren, and I just saw her do The Tempest. You know, I just saw that the movie, I think that came out in 2011, I think it was, where she plays Prospera. And although I didn't love that movie, I love Helen Mirren, and I anybody from the Royal Shakespeare Company, I think, is wonderful. But there are also just a lot of local actors in Pittsburgh who are great at it. You know, a lot of my peers. I think there's nothing more pleasing than hearing, you know, good Shakespeare and understanding it and getting caught up in that. It's just wonderful.
Is the American appreciation currently very different from the European appreciation of Shakespeare?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I think it might be more of a, I don't know that. I think it might be in some ways a perception that people kind of put upon themselves. Oh, I don't get Shakespeare.
Well, and that's what I don't understand.
It.
You know, it's because, again, he wrote these things for common people, for everybody to appreciate and understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yet somehow here, 400 years later, in America anyway, we seem to get a little, oh, that's above my head. I won't understand that. It's a little too highbrow.
That's above
for
my
me.
Head, or it's for nerds.
Yeah, why is this?
But I don't know. We try to make it as sexy as possible. Am I allowed to say that?
You can say whatever you want.
You know, in a certain way. I mean, not pornographic, but sexy, accessible. Because I think that's what it was. I think because the language has changed so much that I think that's a big stumbling block. And we do not speak in iambic pentameter, you know, in verse. I mean, sometimes we do without knowing it, but there are lots of vocabulary words that we simply don't use anymore.
And then on the other hand, there are many that Shakespeare himself invented that we do use on a daily basis.
Yes, like YOLO, coupled.
YOLO, no. For one. that's not
right.
One.
LOL.
But you just said, what was the example?
Coupled.
Yes, yes. Now, I don't know as if I use that on a daily basis, but that is in our, you know, common.
Come hither. I use that with my kids all the time.
Yeah. And that's something I'd like to use more often.
Yeah, well,
come hither.
Everybody should. Come hither.
You know, if I'm on my porch and the mailman drives up, no, come hither.
Use your Pittsburgh dialect.
Come hither.
Come hither. Yeah. You know. Just your normal speaking.
Hey, you, come hither. Shakespeare done in all with a Pittsburgh dialect would be very interesting. Do you think you might ever be courageous enough to produce an entire production of Shakespeare where everybody's talking Yinzer?
We could. I remember in As You Like It 10 years ago, Travis McGonigal, who played Charles, did have a little bit of a Yinzer accent and came out with an IC Light can, and I thought it was funny. I don't know. That's
As Yins Like It.
As Yins Like It. That was our t-shirt campaign. That's right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right.
So,
I thought I was all original.
I should have worn my As Yins Like It t-shirt. Oh, yeah.
That might be a fun thing.
Yeah.
You know? Romeo and Jules, or you know, something
Romeo
like that.
Romeo and Juliet. Phillies.
To this year's production, and the organization produces one production per year, and this year it is As You Like It, celebrating the first production 10 years ago. So life has come full circle.
Yes.
What I think is really great about this is, you know, it performs every weekend in September. At a different public park in Pittsburgh. You're like a traveling, you know, band of gypsies. It's really cool.
We hitch up our horses and get our caravan. So let's see if I can remember this off the top of my head. The first weekend, September 6th and 7th, we are in Frick Park, Squirrel Hill, at 2 p.m. We always have daytime shows. And then the second weekend, I think it's the 13th and 14th, we are the Saturday, the 13th, we are at Arsenal Park in Lawrenceville, and the 14th, we are at West Park Allegheny Commons on the north side, right by the aviary. The third weekend, we are at Schenley Park, Flagstaff Hill, which is our first foray into Schenley, which we're very excited about. And then the final weekend, we are back in Frick Park with two shows on the Saturday, I think 11 and 2:30. And then a 2 p.m. on that final Sunday.
Wow. Now, what do you guys do if it rains?
If it rains, we do the show. Unless it's pouring, or unless there's thunder and lightning, or some other type of storm that makes it dangerous. But we have done the show in rain. And the first year it snowed. We did the first As You Like It in 2005 in November.
Wow.
And it did snow a little bit. So, a light snow.
I think that just adds to the drama.
Yeah. And we ask the actors to, you know, everybody has fairly utilitarian footwear.
Mm.
There are no spike heels or anything like that. So we are safe when we move around. But we do the show if it's raining. And unless it's... Last year, it was just pouring. It had been pouring all morning. Just a downpour. And two people did come.
Wow.
And yeah, but we there was no point in doing it.
I'd have just like taken them out to lunch, you know. And
that's what we did. We went
really
to Silky's. Yeah, we went to Silky's.
That's awesome.
In Squirrel Hill. So yeah, it was just pouring, you know. So, but you know, the show must go on unless it's dangerous. We won't do it in thunder and lightning or.
And again, the wonderful thing about this is all of these performances are free.
They're free.
It's art for free. Yeah. Art for art's sake, you know? So now, if they get to Schenley, I mean, well, you said Flagstaff Hill, so that's where they got to go. Otherwise, they might be kind of just have to listen for, you know, where they hear.
Right.
And
people can check out our website.
Oh, yes, of course.
PittsburghShakespeare.com or PittsburghShakespeare.org.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find us on Facebook at Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the Parks. And you can follow us on Twitter at PGH Shakespeare. On Twitter, or will be listed in all the papers Or you can call 412-404-8531. Or you can check out one of our many posters or postcards that will soon be all around town.
There are so many ways to keep in touch with
you.
There's
so many ways.
So, you know, any plans for next year yet? Or is it too soon to say?
It's too soon to say. We have a couple of things kicking around. One of the things we're thinking about is having a dear friend of mine who was the friar last year, Ron Siebert, play King Lear.
Wow, that's a good, that's my favorite of the tragedies.
It?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. But you need a good Lear, you know. It kind of is contingent on casting a little bit, whether you can do that show or not.
Yeah, that's a tough show.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kicking that around and we'll see.
Now, picking the shows, I mean, what I've always found interesting, too, there are a couple of Shakespeare plays that, like, never get done. And then there are the ones like Hamlet and Romeo and Juliet that are always getting done.
Right.
Is it just that some work kind of lousy, or what is that?
Some are hard. I mean, I think King Lear is an amazing play. It's very hard. I personally am I'm a little humbled by it. And then there are ones like Two Noble Kinsmen, hardly ever done. We should probably do those. But it's true that the comedies are so much more accessible to us in terms of language and in terms of, you know, we don't grow up knowing the same kind of history, of course, as people in Shakespeare's time would. And Shakespeare traveled a great deal and read a great deal and knew about, you know, these historical figures that a lot of his plays are based on. We have done, can I say the Scottish play in here?
Yeah.
M-A-C-B-E-T-H. We have done that show out in the parks, and Romeo and Juliet, which is a tragedy, but it's one of the lighter tragedies. We need to start, I think, making a foray into the histories.
Mm.
And Cymbeline, which is one of my, which is my favorite Shakespeare play, which is similar to The Winter's Tale.
Mm-hmm.
Cymbeline, I believe, was one of his later plays and is called a dream play. But it has similar themes. Imogen, the female protagonist, is kind of cast out of her father's kingdom and goes to find her husband and must dress as a boy and, you know, gets sick and meets who turns out to be some of her extended family. You know, it's the whole
it's we've the whole all thing. Been there.
We've all been there, cast out and dressing like a man. Yeah.
Wait, now, so, did I hear you say that that's what you'll be doing in As You Like It?
I am playing Rosalind.
Oh, okay, so it was you know, it's not a, she is a character that is part of the plot, needs to disguise herself as a man.
Yes, well, Rosalind and her cousin Celia get, well, Rosalind gets banished from her uncle's kingdom and must go to the Forest of Arden, and her dear cousin Celia says, well, if you're going, Rosalind, I'm going too. So let's disguise ourselves. And Rosalind says, well, since I'm so tall, I will dress like a man. And so they dress, they kind of dress down in non-formal or non-court clothing, and they run off to the Forest of Arden, and then a whole bunch of adventures ensue. But yeah, so there's some mistaken identity and disguises going on, which is always fun. And
that always
and Orlando kind of tricks, or Rosalind tricks Orlando, who she's fallen in love with, to court her dressed as a man. Orlando thinks that Rosalind is a man named Ganymede, a very feminine type of man, and he confesses that he's in love with this woman named Rosalind. And so Rosalind dressed as a man, i.e. Ganymede, says, oh, pretend I'm Rosalind and you can woo me and I'll be your wingman and I'll tell you what you're doing wrong, so that when you finally do meet her again, you know what to do. And she kind of puts him through some training, I'd say. Train your man.
It is a must-see of the Shakespeare plays, if you haven't.
It's a lovely play. No. It's a lovely play. And the director, Lisa Ann Goldsmith, is just making it wonderfully fun. And the cast is great. Chuck Beichert is in it, and Nick Benninger, and Elizabeth Ruelas, and Tanya Lynn, and Adam Rutledge. It's just, it and many other people. It's a wonderful, Anthony Gulickson from Point Park, actually, isn't it? It's just wonderful. Adrian Fisher is in it, playing Phoebe. It's great. So I hope everybody comes out and sees it.
Now, one thing that was back up in the news recently is the old authorship question. of Shakespeare. And what this is, you know, is that the theory that Shakespeare, as we know him, really didn't exist. It was sort of a pseudonym, you know, for somebody of nobility that wrote these plays, the assumption being that somebody of Shakespeare's common background would not have had the language or the ability to write these plays. And this is referred to as the authorship question.
The authorship question.
What are your thoughts on the authorship question?
You know, there's a play that I did in graduate school that deals with that. Good Night, Desdemona, Good Morning, Juliet, where this kind of nutty professor is trying to figure that out. And I think people have been trying to figure that out for years. And I certainly am not a Shakespeare scholar. I'm more of a Shakespeare doer and actor and producer. But I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I think Shakespeare certainly was a learned person. And he read classics, and he traveled some, and he knew about things happening in the world, and he certainly knew history. Now, whether he had collaboration, and again, this is not really my area of expertise at all, so I'm kind of just parroting what I've heard. But I mean, my feeling tends to be that he probably wrote most of them, if not all of them, certainly stealing from other people. And, you know, he was writing and competing with some of his contemporaries, and so they were trying to outdo each other all the time. And, you know, some of the first, you know, if you look at the First Folio, and by the way, our production of As You Like It is the First Folio, so it's the original copy. We've kind of gone back to the original language and the original words and what little stage directions there are. Instead of having a newer edition like the Arden, the Penguin edition. So Lisa Ann Goldsmith has carefully gone through and kind of made some cuts and put together a version of the First Folio with the original spellings and everything. But it is true that, you know, I think during the productions in Shakespeare's time, the original copy was left somewhere safe so that nothing could happen to it. And then there was a production copy that the stage manager or, you know, whoever the head actor was would have. And that person, the prompter, wrote in the stage directions and things. So in some cases, some of the stage directions could be the prompters or the stage managers, or they could have been Shakespeare's.
Oh, wow.
And so it's really difficult to know what got changed, what was lost, what was, you know, rewritten, where it came from. I mean, you know, Shakespeare certainly read Ovid and knew the classics and knew mythology and knew history and politics and what was going on, and read Latin, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know about the authorship question. To me, and I am definitely not a Shakespeare scholar, it seems like they could have all been written by him. Whether he had help again or whether he stole from other people, I think is, you know, an entirely different question.
The other thing that was in the news too, I don't know if you recall seeing this, but they found King Richard's body
in a parking lot. Yeah,
And I know, but that was wild. Yeah. And they have confirmed it's him.
It's him.
That's
crazy. They do the thing with the teeth and all that.
And these individuals have, you know, at this point, 500 years later, become, you know, legend, you know, and you see them in a Shakespeare play, it's almost like they're, you know, made up, but then that something like that just reminds you that this was history.
He was a real guy. Yeah. Oh, the history plays are great. All the Richards and the Henrys, and oh, they're lovely. I remember one time seeing Henry IV, parts 1 and 2 at the Folger in D.C., and you could take your beer in.
That's how it ought to be.
That's how it ought to be. Not that I'm condoning alcohol in the parks, because I would never do that.
Well, we condone it here in these interviews anyway.
Right,
so feel free, please.
Well, you know, please, people who come to see us, audience members, bring a chair or blankets better, so, you know, you can sit on the grass. Bring a picnic. Bring some, you know, some iced tea.
Yeah.
And make it a romantic date or a fun family outing or something. All of our plays are also wheelchair accessible because they're outside. But bring a hat. Bring an umbrella. Maybe bring some bug spray. Yes, and the plays are always free. We do ask for donations. We're a not-for-profit, and we are funded by audience donations, grants small businesses and things like that. But of course, it's free to see, but it's not free to produce. And we do pay all of our actors and designers.
That's great.
So see it somewhere. See it somewhere.
This September, it's playing four weekends in four different locations, and hopefully years to come. Free Shakespeare in the Park here in Pittsburgh.
It's a wonderful
addition to our fabulous city of Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for chatting about it.
Yeah, and you'll see us act on the grass without a set. Should I tell that story about that?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well. So we very generously get a city parks permit from the Department of Public Works. And the first year that we did As You Like It, we only performed in Frick Park. And I had to, we got our permit, and then the city kind of temporarily revoked it. Contingent upon, they didn't understand how we were not going to build a set. And so I said, will we act on the grass? And they said, how can you act on grass? And so I had to meet a couple of people from the Department of Public Works, or the Parks Department. And
this is about as far removed from theater as you can get.
Yeah, right. And I did a little one-person Jennifer Tober show for them at Frick Park, brought them coffee, and we had our coffee, and they watched me do some monologues, and then we got our permit. But the question was from the beginning, how can you act on the grass?
Well, if there is any question whatsoever at this point, you can see it in action this September. But the lengths that you went to get this company started,
you know,
a performer at heart.
Yeah. So.
Bravo. Well, great. Yes. And, congratulations in advance on the season. And many, many more to come. Happy 10th anniversary.
Thank you so much.
You are very welcome. Cheers to you.
In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Berg-Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Berg-Vivant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvivant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.